The World Tomorrow. Ambassador College presents Garner Ted Armstrong, bringing you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
And greeting friends around the world, this is Garner Ted Armstrong with the good news of the world tomorrow. A university professor has said, in looking through the Bible, that it was just what you'd expect to find in sacred writing of a primitive people: tribal history, somewhat arrogant pseudoscience, moral exhortation, and folk wisdom. Well, now, what about that statement? Should you accept it upon face value, or can you prove it one way or the other? Does God really exist? Is there a God in heaven above? Or is it a lot of childhood fantasy to think such a thing? And if there is a God, why does he hide himself? And is God fair? Is there really a God which is a personal being, and can you prove it? Or is God just a vague embodiment of all that is good, as opposed to that which is evil in human nature? Why doesn't God come down to this earth and talk to you? If he is, and if he is a rewarder of those who diligently seek after him, then why do Christians have to suffer? You know, these and other questions need to be answered, and most of you don't have the answers. You wouldn't have the faintest idea where to go to get them. But I can tell you the source, and I can show you how you can have the answer in your hands just as quickly as you can get a letter in the mail, and that's a fact. Now, this same professor said Jesus never gave anyone a direct answer. He expected every person to find his own answer. That's a quotation from this man. Apparently, he's never read the Bible. A young man came to Jesus and said, "Good master, what good thing must I do to be saved?" Now, Jesus didn't beat around the bush on that occasion. He said, "If you will enter into life, keep the commandments." How direct can you get? Jesus did then give direct answers. But this university professor, on a casual perusal of the Bible, said he found just what he expected to find. Well, now, here is how some of the religious leaders reacted in a poll conducted by the same newspaper which earlier had published his remarks. A minister principal of a certain college said, "The Bible doesn't prove God's existence, but it does reveal it. It's a question of faith." He said, "I'm just as convinced that God exists as the professor is convinced that he doesn't." Now, on the other hand, another religious leader said, "There's no proof of anything." Now, that's a good philosophy, I suppose, if you'd call it that. "There's no proof of anything," he said. I guess he now isn't even sure the world exists. Even a scientist, he said, works on faith, starting out by believing something is true. A rabbi said, "The Bible is not a scientific textbook. It contains no proof either that God does or does not exist. A person acquires his belief in God in various ways, perhaps through the teaching of his parents, personal experience, or through his own conscience." Then another minister said, "Well, the professor is obviously not acquainted with the modern concept of theology. You can't prove God's existence because this is something beyond man's reasoning power," he said. "Belief comes through faith." But isn't it amazing that faith is absolutely empty and of no value whatsoever unless it is based on actual fact? Unless faith is grounded firmly on a direct promise, on something that is tangible, something that is evident, something that is provable, then there's no sense in having any faith one way or the other. Now, a president of a church conference group said, "I agree, you can't provide scientific proof to back up everything in the Bible, but there are many things, such as love, for which there is no scientific answer." Now, do these various answers to the professor satisfy you? Does this leave you with a very definite, concrete faith, a real hope that you can pin your dreams and your plans for the future on? In the world, one thing is sure: people have religion. In the world, another thing is sure: people go to church, and people have ideals and ideas, and people have various philosophies of life. And there's another thing that is really for sure, and that is that people are confused, and people differ in their opinions and beliefs, and the question is, who is right? Where can you find the truth? Most of you have been swallowing the pill that there is no such thing as truth. There is no source to which you can go to find it. Everything is relevant. It has no meaning except as the changing times give it meaning and weight. And so most of you have gotten the sort of an idea that perhaps no one is really right, and if someone claims he is, you say, "Well, now, wait a minute, who gives you the right to be right? And why are you any more right than so-and-so over here?" And most of you people listening to my voice right this moment really have not taken the time to prove these biggest questions of life one way or the other. You really haven't. religious folk, church-going people, assume there is a God. And they give answers such as many of these theologians did, that perhaps God exists because we should have faith that he does, or that we have a concept that God exists, or that we're satisfied with what our parents taught us. And we seem to be afraid to face the scientists with the tools they use themselves in their own profession, and to demonstrate beyond the shadow of a doubt that God does exist. Now, Russians claim that our capitalistic system of free enterprise is wrong, and we claim it's right. The question is, who are you to believe? You know, in any argument, there are always two sides, aren't there? And of course, it seems that most of us have swallowed the idea that there isn't any concrete answer, but there is, and you can have it in your own hands. I'm going to tell you about it, and how easy it is to get it. Still others, of course, didn't care if there was any proof. They believe in him anyway, whether he could be proved or disproved. They thought their minds are made up. Like one fellow said one time, look, don't confuse me with the facts. My mind is made up. Well, now, what about it? Is your mind made up one way or the other? Various mixed reactions were obtained in another poll conducted by this same newspaper following a noon-hour lecture to about 1,100 students by a philosophy professor, and he really blasted them out of their seats. Here's some of the things he said. And I'll just quote him real quickly on several cardinal points he made in his speech, and they are astounding. He really had them sitting on the edge of their chairs. He said, you can't take a section of the Bible and apply it to any specific situation. He said, churches have become either custodians of stale theology or social clubs. He said, no one has ever been converted by reading the Bible. He said, sin is relative. As the only sin which is not breaking a man-made rule is when we refuse to face ourselves. He said, if your own particular concept of God works for you, then it is correct. Students said, wow, what is all this? So the newspaper conducted a survey, and the students were saying this, a fourth-year forestry student, and I quote, I wholeheartedly agree with the professor. I think science will eventually replace religion. Science has already answered the question of the evolution of life, and I think it will in time answer the mystery of creation. A second-year education student studying in the educational field said, while I don't agree with all of the professor's views, I think he presents a very convincing and logical argument. The Bible certainly falls down on the question of proving God's existence. Of course, if you'd ask this girl which books are in the Bible and what they say, she'd probably say, well, I don't know. It's like the one person that didn't attend church, and the minister asked him why, and he says, I don't need to attend church. I can read my Bible at home. He said, well, do you read it? He said, well, frankly, no. Now, there you are. There's a nice, logical, sensible answer for you. You know, people just don't really look into things. To prove it one way or the other, we simply are, it seems, as a people, generally speaking, around the world in whatever country you live, prone to make vast, all-encompassing, broad, sweeping statements or affirmations of belief or conviction without the faintest shred of proof one way or the other. Now, I come to you not apologetically, but with the authority of that very God who does exist and who this moment can read your thoughts, heart, and mind. That God who is the creator of heaven and earth and the universe. That God who says only the fool has said in his heart there is no God. And that God is sending this message around the world. You need to get to know that God, because he's going to shake this earth like a rag doll until its teeth rattle in the years just ahead. And you know, there aren't many more years where people can doubt and harangue and argue, and we can conduct polls and opinion samplings and surveys to find whether some person is going to flap his mouth like a loose coat sleeve in a high breeze as to his particular erudite opinions on the non-existence of God and as to whether Jesus gave a direct or a concrete answer. Would this same professor, as I've asked twice already, think of me that I was very scientific if I were to look into a science book of his and to say, just what I expected I would find in a science book, a lot of mathematical equations and silly formulas, a lot of sort of technological jargon that's difficult to understand, and beside that, a lot of quotations from foreigners and Germans and the like. Would he think I had given his science book a really complete perusal or a frank survey, a complete study? Would he think that I had a logical point of view? Would he really think I was giving it a fair shake, a really fair chance? I doubt it. But you know, he said, frankly, I don't think God exists, you know. Isn't it amazing? People get opinions and they think those opinions are worthwhile. Well, now a third-year art student said, I don't know whether it can be proved or not. I don't care whether there is proof or not, or whether there is or isn't a God. Now, that's a good answer for you. I mean, you know, most people just don't even care. What, me worry? What was it? We're in the era now where you hear about beatniks, that people that live on pads. You think of those as being missiles, but apparently beatniks and missiles share one thing in common, and that's a pad. Well, anyhow, what was it? I've forgotten it now. Two ladies, wasn't it, garbed in black, that were helped across the street by a beatnik? And one of them said, thank you, young man. He said, never mind, any friend of Zorro's is a friend of mine. Well, you know, that is more or less the attitude of a lot of college students today. What, me worry? Why should I care? If you ask them about their opinion, they have no opinion. Their minds are totally empty. It's blank. They go down the street snapping their fingers, thinking of the latest melody they've heard, or the latest rock and roll beat. You see them going along with sort of a far-off, empty look on their pimpled face, with their transistor radio hanging from one arm, and sort of jogging down the highway or the street as if they were in a dance step. Well, for you people who are thinking, what are the real answers? Here are some of the questions and the opinions to cap this off on students' debate on the existence of God, and these are the leaders in management and industry and science and forestry and conservation and medicine and commerce and arts in the world that is going to be here in the next few years. Here are the leaders. Here's the brain trust. Here's the intelligentsia. Here's what they think. I was an atheist for a time, said a second-year forestry student, but although there is no proof of God's existence in the Bible, I acquired faith and became a Christian. A second-year medical student said, there's nothing scientific about the Bible, but like most beliefs, belief in God is something people just feel without the backing of logical reasoning. And then a fourth-year commerce student said, Christianity does not require proof of God. These are amazing. And a person can believe in God without being a good Christian. Well, that's for sure. I'll tell you for sure. That's absolutely positive, because there are multiple millions of people who can believe in God and not be a good Christian. Now, he didn't know how close he came to quoting the Bible there. And that's about as close as any of them came to quoting it, because, of course, most of them never even seen in the pages of it. But it does say in the second chapter of James, you believe that God is one, or that there is one God, whichever way it would be in the original Greek, you do well. But he said the devils, that is demons, or twisted, perverted, fallen angels who are in rebellion against God believe the same thing and they tremble. One thing many Christians have in common with demons is they believe in God. Now the demons have more knowledge than most Christians, though, because they're convinced of it. They know, and they fear and tremble. I think that makes some fallen angels more sensible than it does some human beings. And what a pity. And so a third-year art student said, I think too many people take the middle of the road on religious questions, and I'll say to that, amen. Although the Bible doesn't provide proof of God, and that's where he went off the track and didn't seem to know what he was talking about, he said, I have faith in him. I'm only sorry that Christianity has become a business to a lot of people. Amen to that also. Well, my friends, what about it? Here the clerics say there's no need to prove it. They leave their students in total doubt. They're all mixed up. No one seems to know one way or the other. A professor comes out with some glib, smug statement, some crass argument or another, and simply says in his intellectual superiority and vanity, God does not exist. Where does that leave you? Merely to express your opinion? Well, I'm not going to give you my opinion. I'm going to give you the facts from the Bible. You need to write. If you've never seen it proved one way or the other, you need to write immediately for a book that we have for you on Does God Exist? Is there any way whatsoever to prove anything? Are you alive? Is that tangible? Can you prove it? Does the human body experience pain? You could pull out a hat pin and take a check and find out whether or not that is true. We've got to come down to earth and decide first, last, and always that there has to be some common ground of agreement before you can begin to uncover the truth of any issue or subject. Now, do you agree that things exist? That there is a universe? Do you agree that there are laws, that there are forces, there is energy? Do you agree that this universe actually is here? It is real? That you are a human being and you're on the earth, which is a part of our particular solar system, one little part of our galaxy? Do you begin with these basic facts? Do you believe that life is? Do you believe then that life creates or reproduces life and life after its own kind? Do you agree that any scientific test you can arrive at by any possible experiment demonstrates infallibly every time that life comes from the living, cannot, does not, never has, never will come from the not living, except by the divine intervention of Almighty God? Science can't create a worm, and not even one cell of whatever part of the anatomy of a worm you would care to investigate. But men have created God by the millions in their minds. Well, this is one of the most urgent questions of this century. It's never been more urgently necessary for you to answer the question to yourself. People assume, atheists, scientists, yes, professors of various parts of education assume that God does not exist. Christians assume that he does, and then their clergy says, well, it's not really necessary to answer it, you know, because after all, it can't be proved. But it can, and it should be, and you can find the proof yourself. There's a delusion gripping the minds of more people today than communism, holding them in its sway, deluding and deceiving them, making them veritable slaves, and that is the belief in no God. Famed evolutionists state, there is no longer either need or room for supernatural beings capable of affecting the course of events in the evolutionary pattern of thought. They say the earth was not created, it evolved. Naive, young, gullible people begin to believe them. They say there's no longer any need for a concept of God. They say the Bible is a collection of Hebrew fables. It's a collection of just what you would expect to find. A lot of slanted writing. A lot of moral exhortation. And a lot of vague assumptions about the existence of a God. Well, now, you have got to answer it once and for all. These questions demand an answer. Your life and the lives of your loved ones hinge on what the answer is. You need to find out. Can you find out? You need to be afraid of the various pronouncements of university professors, of scientists, of atheists, and of writers and others. Or can you really prove it? Well, here also is an article that is free of charge, that gives you step-by-step, concrete, simple, yet great, overwhelmingly, absolutely all-encompassing, worldwide, well, I don't know what else to say as an adjective, but principles, proofs, infallible proofs that God does exist. Here they are, step-by-step, one after the other, seven of them. Every single one of them all by itself, a separate proof if the others didn't exist, if there were only, let's say, two of them, it would still prove God's existence. If there could only be one of them, it would still absolutely infallibly demonstrate God does exist. You don't even need all seven of them. But here are seven. And each one of them is only a great, broad, basic principle, which is made up of thousands of myriads of other finite points, every one of which demonstrates infallibly that God does exist. Every study of any science is proof of the existence of God. Yes, it is. Comparative embryology? Some of you ever studied into that? What is comparative embryology? Comparing the embryos of chickens, dogs, salamanders, and humans. What does it prove? Does it prove one came from the other? I don't care if a human fetus looks like a chicken at various stages of development. You can't make it come out a chicken. It's still going to come out a human. There's no way to make it jump the gap or bridge the gap from one to the other. Comparative embryology is just like you're familiar with the works of a particular architect. And every single time you see his works, you're familiar with it because he uses a certain type frieze around the tops of his building, or maybe he uses a certain type of a flair, a certain modernist flair, or maybe he sticks to the contemporary styles or something of that nature. Every single time you see a building, you say, well, that's so-and-so. A certain architect did that. That's true. I've been with men who have said such things. I had shown some men on Ambassador College campus at one time a couple of our gardens here, and they said, who's your landscape architect? And I told them. And they said, why, we know him. Why, I thought that's what this was. I recognized that. Looked to me exactly like his work. And you know, he recognized the garden, a totally different garden, one he'd never even seen before, because it had the same identifying characteristics of its architect and its designer. Does comparative embryology prove evolution? Or does it prove similarity in design? One master planner, one overall architect. Now, you know, you need to come down to Earth for a minute and then look off up into the heavens and see the vastness of this universe and demand an answer. Read any textbook on history. Read any textbook on evolution. Read anything, any of the works of Darwin, of Huxley, of Lyell, of others. Any one of them, it doesn't make any difference. And you will have to come back to the inevitable conclusion that every one of them begin with one basic factor, and that is the existence not only of laws, of forces, and of energies, but the existence of a vast, so infinite, so as to be virtually incomprehensible universe, a limitless universe of gigantic, unbelievable space, of multiple billions of stars, of astral bodies, of planets, of solar systems and galaxies. Now, you know, from a book entitled Civilization Past and Present, Volume 1, page 31 by Walbank and Taylor, there's a quotation. It talks about the most common explanation accepted on the hypothesis of dynamic encounter as to the suggestion of the beginning of this Earth. So analyze what that statement says. It says, and I want you to analyze it, in brief, that is, this explanation of the hypothesis of dynamic encounter, in brief, it suggests that our solar system had its birth when the sun was approached by another huge star. The latter, through the operation of the law of gravitation, detached from the sun great masses of flaming gas. Now, this is one of the latest, and of course it's talked about, but this is very scientific, isn't it? A great sun approaching a great star. A lot of operation of things, though. Now, let's think about it, because this is exactly what it says in that particular book. The latter, through the operation of the law of gravitation, detached from the sun great masses of flaming gas. The orphan masses from the parent sun gradually cooled and crystallized to become the nuclei of planets. These continued, past tense, to revolve around the sun, held in their orbits by the gravitational pull of the parent body. The evolution of the Earth to its present state was very gradual. End of quotation. You can read it. But analyze what you read. Here were some of the phrases in the book. Quote, probably. Then another one, some progress has been made. Another one, attempting to explain. Another one said, at least a clue. Another one said, explanation commonly accepted. Then we found the word hypothesis, and then it suggests. And what a collection. Here are all kinds of attempts to explain. Some progress being made, at least a clue being given, a certain suggestion of an hypothesis, and the word itself, we guess, has great meaning, doesn't it? And that is the meaning of the word hypothesis, you know. Hypothesis. We think, maybe, or we guess. Then, in very careful wording, having begun with a whole host of perhapses, maybes, and possibles, the authors begin to state that many of these things were definite past occurrences which have taken place. Now, you know, at the very beginning, every one of these books begin with many attempts to explain clues and guesses, and as quickly as they can in a few paragraphs, they dispense with the entirety of the universe and come down to a slimy ocean bed billions of years ago on one particular little planet we call Earth, which is less than one grain of sand in the limitless seashores of the Earth, hurtling out through space, or the seashores of the universe, rather, as thinking of it in relationship, of course, to the number of stars in the universe, of which there are so many billions, science can't even tell us how many, apparently. So think of it from that point of view. Now, listen to this. They admit the existence of our solar system, of a sun, in what I just read to you, of another huge star. They admitted to the operation of the law of gravitation. They admitted to great masses of flaming gas, and they admitted that these gases gradually cooled. They mentioned how they crystallized and formed the nuclei of planets. How? How did it occur? By what law? What made it do that? How did you get gravitational pull? What about all the myriad incomprehensible laws, active dynamic laws, laws that Newton and men of his type had to describe and discover and put into writing for us? Laws governing the cooling of warm bodies, laws governing the explosion, the flaming, the giving off of light, heat, and energy of gas, laws having to do with the solar system, a huge sun, the operation of definite, immutable, unchangeable laws, a supposed collision. The principle of dynamic encounter itself is loaded with the suggestion of absolute law.
How do these men begin with a whole host and a fathomless collection of interchangeable and interdependent laws, of laws which govern, which regulate, which uphold, which sustain a tremendous universe, myriad laws, laws of heat, of light, of energy, motion, the rotation of astral bodies, the laws of gravity, the principle of isostasy, every principle and law imaginable, they begin with all this, it's ready-made, it's there, that's par for the course. Then they try to tell you how life came into being. And they make a lot of guesses and admit they are guessing, and as one leading scientist said, we know that the basis of all matter is the hydrogen atom. Ask us where the hydrogen atom came from, and we have to answer, we don't know. You need to write for these booklets and articles and prove it to yourself once and for all. And here's another article we have for you, many of you have not received before. Why does God hide himself? Why does God hide himself in obscurity where you can't see him or talk to him? You can talk to him if you knew you could, but I mean personally, face to face, to hear his answer literally. Write for this booklet, Does God Exist? A companion booklet, The Proof of the Bible. Many of these students made the flat blanket statement, you can't prove the existence of God from the Bible. I will tell you as a blanket statement, you can. And this booklet proves it. It not only proves the Bible is true and is the inspired word of God, but in so doing also substantiates and proves the existence of God. So write for the booklet, The Proof of the Bible. Write for this article, Why Does God Hide Himself? Why does he? Why doesn't he come down and talk to you? Why does God seem to allow Christian people to suffer? There's an answer to that one too. Write for an article, Why Must Men Suffer? Why does God permit sickness and human woe and misery and accidents? Why does he permit failures and economic collapse? Why does he permit upset weather conditions? Why does he allow war? All of this, in principle, is in this article. So write for these articles and booklets. The 1-7 Proofs God Exists will come to you automatically if you request the booklet on Does God Exist? The proof of the Bible, here they are then. Does God exist? The proof of the Bible. Why does God hide himself? And why is God not real to people? All of these free of charge, absolutely no price whatsoever. All you need to do is request the information on the existence of God. We'll send it to you. And there's no follow-up, no request for money whatsoever. Write for the Plain Truth magazine. You need send no money for it. It's free of charge to you. It's absolutely free. There's no advertising in it. No one's going to call on you. This isn't something where we put your name on a list and then give your name to someone else who comes knocking on the door to try to sell you something. There are no books for sale in it. We don't even have a book list in the back of it somewhere of all types of things that we publish that you can buy. There just isn't any such thing as that, which, of course, you're quite familiar with in many publications. But there isn't in the Plain Truth. From cover to cover, it's straight from the shoulder information you need. And you need for yourself and your family. And it's got a good balance of articles for 5-year-olds all the way up to 95-year-olds. The Bible story for children in every single number. So get your name on that mailing list. There's no magazine that is more important to you right now. All you need to do is send your letter to Herbert W. Armstrong, Post Office Box 111, Pasadena, California. That's Herbert W. Armstrong, Post Office Box 111, Pasadena, California. Be sure you carefully list the call letters of the station to which you've been listening. Write, or better yet, print your name and mail address at the outside of the envelope, and then send your letter to Herbert W. Armstrong, Box 111, Pasadena, California. Remember, they are free of charge. There's no price. Be sure to list the call letters of your station, the address again in just a moment. Until next time, this is Garner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye, friends.
You have heard The World Tomorrow. Send your letters to Herbert W. Armstrong, Post Office Box 111, Pasadena, California.